morning. Good morning. We have a couple of audio problems that they're just working on now while we're waiting for that. Let me hit a couple of procedural points if we can. This briefing by Secretaries Haig and Regan will be on the record and for camera. Now, most of the press corps is leaving today for Cancun. I wanted to report to you who are going, those of you who are going down, that we anticipate that the President will have a departure statement tomorrow morning when he leaves the South Lawn at approximately 8:30. While you are in Cancun, Larry Speaks will be there today and will give you a later in the day plans for briefings for tomorrow. Our tentative plan now is that there will be a major briefing in Cancun at 3 p.m. tomorrow Cancun time, which is 5 p.m. Eastern time. We recognize that that is late in the day, and we are now working on ways to provide information to you prior to that time. But we do have a number of bilaterals, as you know, that are, will be occurring almost in a back-to-back fashion there, and we'll be providing more information to you on that as the day goes on. But Larry will be the point of contact all day today, and we'll provide that information. We don't have a firm schedule on that yet. You will be meeting with the President. Look, no, we will not be meeting with Prince Fahd tomorrow.
How many bilaterals does he have?
Well, there are a number that are tentatively scheduled, but the firm number is, I think we'll give you more information on that during the day today. There are a number that will be scheduled, but the invitations have gone out. A number of invitations have been accepted. Some have not been yet, and we'll try to provide you a better schedule on that. In what respect?
Coverage.
Well, we are working with the host country on that, and we're going to try to provide as much as open a situation there as we can. We are working on it to maximize the degree of coverage. I think you have to bear with us on the fact that there are some 22 countries there and an island which is going to be quite crowded with journalists and with officials from various countries and so forth. So it's we are doing the best we can under the circumstances. We'll provide as much information as we can in much the same spirit as we attempted to do in Ottawa. Now, let me see if the audio problems are checked. Is David Prosper here? Are we ready to go on these mics over here? Why don't we begin? Each of the secretaries has an opening statement to make, and then they'll take your questions. The questions will be directed to Cancun. Let me stress that this is a briefing on the Cancun summit.
All right, I guess I'm scheduled to say the first few homilies to get you perked this morning. As you know, this Cancun meeting is a very unique meeting, which brings together, really for the first time, the leaders, the key leaders of the developed and of the developing world. And represented in the 22 nations there will be two-thirds of the world's population and roughly three-quarters of the world's wealth. So it's a substantial gathering. The focus, of course, of Cancun is an exchange of views between the developed leaders and the developing world leaders on the subject of world economic growth. We all know that really starting with Bretton Woods, the world at large entered into an era of increasing interdependence. So there's no question but that international cooperation focused on economic, political, growth, and interdependence is vitally important. We seek essentially development of an international will which would focus on practical means for achieving economic growth. The president goes to Cancun very sensitive to the problems of the developing world, problems which also cause great problems in the developed world, rising costs of energy, a tendency because of declining economic growth rates towards protectionism, and the manifestations of that in each of the countries, unemployment and other economic dislocations. The president goes to Cancun with an agenda of his own, a clear set of convictions as to what are the best ways of achieving economic growth. Others will go with their own conceptions, and there have been differences between the developed and the developing world on how best to achieve economic growth. And in that context, the president goes with an open mind. He wants to listen, and he wants to learn, and he hopes that his own views will be accepted with an equally responsible and flexible frame of mind, with the view towards narrowing differences for practical solutions. One of the very, very important aspects of Cancun, beyond the plenary sessions, which will involve a number of interventions by 22 leaders, will be the bilateral discussions that the president holds with a number of developing world leaders who have not been in a close dialogue with the American government for an extended period. So we think this is a very unique and important opportunity to first provide for the president an ability to open up a relationship with a number of vitally important world leaders from the developing sector. The president is going a little early to Cancun so that he will have the opportunity on Wednesday to start the bilateral discussions and hopefully to conclude by the end of the 2.5 days, or by Saturday, bilaterals with each of the heads of state that are attending. I want to emphasize in conclusion that the president is going to Cancun with a positive outlook that this unique meeting can make a contribution towards an improvement in the international consensus for practical approaches to world economic growth. And I think I've said enough. We clearly will be engaged in discussions with America's neighbors, Mexico, Canada, with America's major trading partners, Mexico, Canada, plus the United Kingdom, France, Federal Republic of Germany, Japan, Brazil, India, China, and the Philippines. They are our major trading partners. We will be dealing with our major energy suppliers, Mexico, Canada, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Nigeria, and Algeria. There will be rich and poor in attendance, new and old cultures, capitalists, socialists, and Marxists. And I think all of this adds to a very unique and very interesting and a very challenging series of discussions.
I'd like to follow up on what the Secretary has said in discussing more of the economic background of what's leading to Cancun and what we hope to get out of the meetings at Cancun. I think we're in full agreement with the other 21 countries that the goal of Cancun is to maximize world economic growth and development. And that has to be essentially on a common basis. Now, the picture is brighter than we, I think, have a right to expect, considering the two major oil shocks. For example, during the last decade, the growth rate for all of the developing countries was higher than that of the industrialized countries, 5.1 to 3.2. Since 1960, export volume for developing countries, excluding OPEC, has been growing at a rate of 6 to 7% per year. So progress has been made, but the idea behind this is how can we do even better in the next decade than we have done in the past decade. The strategy for development will have to be outlined at Cancun. What's the best strategy for continuing this and accelerating the progress? Now, we recognize that part of this strategy has to come from assistance from the industrialized countries to the less developed countries. In that respect, our own country has done rather well. We've given over $130 billion in the last three decades, and we continue to be the largest giver of foreign aid in the world. We gave about $7.1 billion in 1980. So the question is never one of whether it is foreign aid or no foreign aid, but rather what's the proper mix of official and private sector actions. We think that more emphasis should be placed on the private sector. And the challenge there is to create new wealth rather than redistribute current wealth. And it has always come through that when you do have more trade and investment, you end up with more jobs and more production, which is basically what the less developed countries want. As you know, the president has referred to the magic of the marketplace in his Philadelphia speech. An example of that would be that in the last 24 months, the non-OPEC, less developed countries, earned more from their exports to the United States, $115 billion, than the entire third world has received from the World Bank in all of its 36 years of history. Private non-concessional loans and foreign direct investment is more than twice the official development assistance that's flowing there. So in other words, the private sector is doing a good job now, but our aim at CanCon will be to discuss with the nations there how to make it even more so. We believe that the increasingly free world trade environment is important for all of us, and we're going to continue to lend strong support to the existing institutions, that is the World Bank, GATT, the IMF, and the like, as the proper forum for discussions that of how to improve those institutions so they can better serve their constituencies. So, as the Secretary of State said, we are going to Cancun to listen, to learn, and to share our views. We recognize there are serious difficulties before us, and we don't minimize them. But we're going with a sense of American optimism that by working together, we can all grow, and we can all progress much more than we perhaps think is possible at this point. Why don't I pause here to see what questions you have of us.
Mr. Secretary, the President in Philadelphia last week told the group, we know we're walking into a hostile atmosphere. There'll be those there who simply want a policy of take away from the haves and deliver to the have-nots. How can you be optimistic going into that?
Well, I think that is a classic expression of the differences that have existed between the developed world and some of the developing world leaders, but I don't think we would anticipate that that Cancun is going to be necessarily confrontational. I anticipate that it will not be. I participated in the 1-2 August ministerial level preparatory meetings at Cancun for this summit, and I would say that the attitude was constructive and positive and flexible on all sides, and I think while there will be differences in certain developing leadership attitudes, basically I think all people are going there. It's important to remember that we agreed at the ministerial level meeting preparatory to Cancun that there would be no formal agenda, that there would be no communique, and that there would be a free and open exchange of views in a number of functional category areas, energy, food, finance, and investment, and trade. And I think this will offer a good opportunity for both the developing and the developed world to get a better appreciation of each other's concerns and perspectives.
When the President discusses the security situation with other world leaders, as I assume he will, is he going to tell them that he believes the Soviets are on the march and that they are drifting toward war?
Well, first, let me emphasize that this meeting is not designed to be a political forum for East-West matters, but more importantly, a economic and developmental forum involving the developed and the developing world. So I don't anticipate that that will be a heavy theme in any sense, either in the plenaries, certainly, or in the bilateral. Anticipate AWACS will come up in the bilaterals, certainly not in the plenary. The purpose of this conference is not to conduct business that it is disassociated from the purposes of the conference. We have maintained a very steady and continuous dialogue with the government of Saudi Arabia on the subject of AWACS. So it's not necessary that it not necessary at all.
Could we pursue that other question just asked you, President? Do you think the President agrees with General Schweitzer?
With General Schweitzer?
That the Soviets are on the move and are going to strike. General Robert L. Schweitzer is quoted as telling the War College.
I think General Schweitzer is entitled to express his own opinion, and he did so.
War, sir, and that the Soviets now have supremacy in all three legs of the triad. Do you believe that?
Are we here to talk Cancun or General Schweitzer?
Mr. Secretary, what ideas does the administration have about following up on this meeting?
What idea?
Does the administration have about following up on the meeting?
Well, I don't anticipate there will be great enthusiasm for another summit-level Cancun. I think this is a unique meeting that was visualized as a one-time affair. Now, it remains to be seen whether or not the participating governments would see some value in the specialist follow-up meetings that would come out of their deliberations at Cancun. We would go into that with a very open mind and frankly, inclined to be positive on it, depending on how the discussions come out.
Mr. Secretary, do you think there's risk in Cancun? Do you think that, as President Mitterrand says, if nothing happens at Cancun, the whole thing can go backwards rather than forwards on international development?
Well, I don't make it a habit of nitpicking the pronouncements of visiting heads of state. I think there's a lot of truth in that. If the dialogue were totally sterile, it would be a setback for the kind of cooperative, practical formula we're looking for. On the other hand, I don't anticipate that that will happen.
Secretary Reagan, do you think it can be fairly said that the President is sort of transferring the philosophy of his economic program and supply side economics to the rest of the world in his proposals?
No, I think the President recognizes that there are different economic philosophies in these countries and that things that might work in the United States might not work in nations that are still in a less developed stage. But I think what he's going to suggest them is that no matter which stage of growth they're in, that the private sector has proven to be the best. When you look around the world at which nations are emerging faster than others, you have to see the ones that have elected to try the private sector are doing better than others. So he will be suggesting them that they try more of that.
You're not saying that it just seems to me that following a rather consistent economic philosophy at home, and much of the language you used in Philadelphia, or the rest of the world seem to echo this language at home. And I'm wondering if supply-side economics is what he would like to see much of the developing world adopt.
Well, I think what he's trying to put into the developing world theme is that they try the incentive method, that incentives seem to work better, that a free marketplace with free private citizens allowed, whether it's in agriculture or in production or in other phases of the economy, that they'd be allowed to do their own thing rather than to have it dictated by the government seems to him and seems to us to be the best way to succeed.
Secretary Haig, what is the significance do you see of the Soviet Union not being there, and what risk to the United States' interests in free market economy developing in those countries if the United States is not forthcoming enough with whatever the developing nations ask for?
Well, in the first place, the non-participation of the Soviet Union in the conference is not particularly startling. I think one could assess very easily the Soviet Union's lack of contribution to international economic development. Their principal contribution has been the provision of arms. Now, I don't think that your question with respect to that we are drawing these kinds of alternatives at all. As Secretary Reagan's pointed out, we're looking for the proper balance. And we go there with five principles in mind that I articulated at the United Nations General Assembly speech. A great emphasis on the benefits of open markets, great emphasis on the creation of a climate for investment and technology transfer between developed and developing world, an orientation of our aid, which is a part of the American program for the third world, but a reorientation of that aid that so it will contribute to self-sustaining economic growth and production capacities in recipient nations. We've also emphasized the principle of tailoring our programs to regional needs to avoid a glossary template on top of the developing world, which does not take cognizance of the profound differences that exist not only between nation and nation, but in a regional context as well. And finally, we have and will continue to seek to create a political climate in which practical solutions can emerge to deal with these anguishing problems. Now, these are the five principles that underlie our approach to an era of improving and increasing growth, and it is proceeding from an already substantial base, as Secretary Reagan pointed out.
Mr. Secretary, you've attacked the growth and protectionist measures worldwide. Now, most developing world leaders there, particularly the ones who have been more successful, know the role that protectionism played in the growth of the United States economy. They know the role that government-directed measures played in the growth of the United States economy. Do you think that it increases the role of the United States in the developing world if we pretend ignorance of that history?
Well, I don't think we do pretend ignorance. I think the United States has been the foremost leader of the industrialized world as a proponent of free trade. And we are an avid supporter in the GATT mechanism, and we are going to participate actively in the 82 GATT conference with the specific view of furthering the elimination of barriers to trade. And one can look at the statistics, and I'd ask Secretary Reagan to give them to you with respect to the bulk of our trade with the developing world. It constitutes the largest part, as he pointed out in his opening statement, of their economic welfare, if you will. Very, very important.
Are you saying that protectionist measures, which were one of the founding principles of the Republican Party in this country, have no real role to play in economic development?
Well, I would eschew your inference that protectionist principles were founded by the Republican Party. It is President Reagan's policy to be an advocate of free, open trade.
I can assure you that the world leaders you'll be meeting with know the role of protectionism in developing the economy.
Well, now let me. Are you giving a speech or asking a question?
Well, I would like you to comment on that.
I am commenting. Our position, our policy is to be a proponent of free trade. Now, we all know that we have a government that is built on three balanced branches, and that the American legislature has a role in the evolution of our policies. We know that there are certain support aspects of our trade policies. Most of them, incidentally, are in the dairy sector, and they do not involve the concerns of the developing world. So I would hope to make that point to you. We are very, very free and open in general. And compared to other developed nations, we are substantially better. And I think an objective observation of that kind is important in the context of your question.
Sir, what is the reason no communique will be issued at the end of the conference?
Well, I think in general the participating governments felt that given the short period and the number of participating governments, that we could have spent a good part of the 2.5 days at Cancun negotiating the language of a communique instead of indulging in the free exchange of views that we think are so important.
Are concerned, we'll stand on the Ottawa communique. In the words of the Ottawa communique, were that we're prepared to engage in preparations leading toward global negotiations. I can't quote it exactly, but to the extent that they show that they will be able to achieve something worthwhile. And that's exactly the frame of mind we're in as we approach Cancun. As Secretary Haig said, we'll be listening to what they have to say regarding these mechanisms.
Don't we generally regard global negotiations as a one nation, one vote, UN forum sort of thing in which we'd consistently be outvoted?
Well, the position of the United States has been that the framework of the United Nations 1979 position has been that was not satisfactory to us. The G77 has been trying to set up a new agenda. Others have suggested to us that we should approach all of this process with an open mind. We have agreed to approach it with an open mind to see what sort of preparations can we make that would lead to something that's worthwhile.
Follow-up. Would you be, during the bilateral visit to Baraka, Nair, and possibly Nair County, try to move them into your camp or with that kind of consensus?
Are you talking about, in general, their political orientation? Not at all. We're down there to listen, to exchange views. As Secretary Reagan pointed out, we agreed to communicate language at Ottawa, which I would refer you to. And what remains to be seen is whether or not the conditions that we are talking about for such a dialogue or the requirements that would substantially justify confidence in such a dialogue will develop. Well, I would prefer to wait till the conference until the President has an opportunity to make his intervention and to have the benefit of hearing the other interventions.
Secretary Haig, going back to bilaterals, what do you expect to come out of those with the Saudis, Foreign Minister Ginther, other than the conversations the President will have regarding the Cancun?
Well, I think when the heads of state sit down, there is a general exchange of views on a number of areas of mutual concern, global, regional, and bilateral. And although the time is going to be short, I would anticipate this would occur in each of the bilaterals. The main focus, however, will clearly be on the topic of the Cancun summit itself. But it won't be confined to that. It never should be.
How can you say that a member of the NSC speaks for himself?
I don't. Did somebody talk about Cancun?
Well, can't you address yourself to that? Why not?
Talking about a very major statement in the paper today, which is of concern to every American.
Helen, I think you're sweet this morning.
That's going to get
Can we talk about Cancun?
Mr. Secretary, you said in your opening statement that you're trying to arrange bilaterals for President Reagan with every of the other 21.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Did I understand you correctly to say in your opening statement that you're trying to arrange bilaterals with every one of the other 21 heads of state or representatives?
Well, you know, there'll be a number that will not be there. For example, I think the Ivory Coast will not be there. Chancellor of Austria will not be there. Helmut Schmidt
so you
is.
Would omit those, but try to arrange them with all.
Well, we may. You know, I don't know whether it will be done. Whether the foreign ministers or the representative of the head of state who is missing, we will work in, or whether I will have to see them separately. That's a question that remains to be seen. We're trying to structure all these meetings now. Some may be in a collective, if you will, that we would have more than one at one session. But it is the president's intention to especially have bilaterals with each and every one of the developing leaders that will be at Cancun.
Secretary,
did you Helen ask you at the very beginning whether, in meeting with Prince Fogg, whether you would discuss the AWACS?
Yeah.
Am I right you said that the president would not discuss AWACS with Prince
well,
Fogg?
Well, we can't control what the Saudi Arabian side might raise, but I don't think it's not on our agenda to do so.
What about at lower levels? What about you meeting with an official of a lower rank from Saudi?
I don't anticipate this will be a topic at the meeting.
Yeah. Two more. Yeah.
It's very possible because we're in a continuous dialogue with the government of Saudi Arabia and have been for a number of months on this subject.
Yeah, may I suggest we take a couple of more questions and then go.
And on the financing, you said we gave $130 billion, and in 1980 it was $7.1 billion. What's the fiscal year of 1980? What is fiscal year
1981's figures will be $6 billion plus, yes.
One last question.
That's hard to say. As you know, I've mentioned a number of functional areas which will be addressed, and of course the discussion of procedural approaches will also come up, procedural approaches. And so you could have some specialists engaged in the post-Cancun period, specialists from the participating nations, on not only the functional substantive areas I touched upon, but future procedural arrangements. I just think it's too early to say. You know, I don't want to go down there suggesting that we have a canned solution.
Thank you very much. Well, for procedural purposes, let me just say this. On the bilaterals, I mentioned to you earlier today that Larry Speaks in Cancun will have more information for you on the bilateral schedule. There are three bilaterals
that
you...
Very poor yes, General
Schweitzer. Bill, can you hold for a moment, please?
Why are you picking on poor General Schweitzer this morning?
Yeah. Can we hold for... Bill, can we hold just for a moment? We have three bilaterals that we can report to you that are firm for tomorrow. You can anticipate the president will meet with President Lopez Portillo at the airport upon arrival there in Mexico for a bilateral meeting. There will be another bilateral meeting with Indira Gandhi at Cancun time, 2 p.m., and Herrera Campins of Venezuela at 6:15 tomorrow in Cancun. We anticipate that there will be additional bilateral meetings there. But the final schedule on those has not been set yet, and we'll give those to you just as soon as we can. Thank you very much, Secretaries. We'll then also announce a briefing schedule later in the day. Thank you very much.
This is a story about General Schweitzer being
bring it to be off the record to 300
off.
Well, it was as you know, there are a number of these gatherings from time to time in the city and elsewhere, and this is an expression of his personal view.
Does he still
and
have a job? Involved.
I think he indicated that he did.
But he's the head of the
he's an advisor on the National Security Council.
Well, these are obvious.
The president doesn't very often have an advisor. He receives strongly
does he still have a job?
If this article is correct, he clearly didn't submit his speech in advance. Because he says that he knew it would not be transmitted with all proof.
Does he still have a job?
What time does the war start? I need to get my cameras out. Hey, where'd the colonel go?
Thank you.
attention, please. Now being posted are three releases and two notices to the press.
All back to the way it was.